Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Chris Langwallner, the co-founder and CEO of What If Foods, is with us, and a Singapore-based company looking at the future of food. Chris, welcome to Weekend Morning. So glad to have you with us.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Glenn. Absolutely thrilled to be on your show. And I think we have to have a tough challenge in front of us to bridge from national security to the future of food.
Well, you know what, though? Food is becoming national security as well, right, for many countries and in the future. So we're not far off, I don't think. Let's hope that there's a little more calmness around policy planning as it relates to that. But that's a topic for another day. Chris, tell us about your company, What If Foods, and NameZ, the things that you started here in Singapore, and what are you actually doing around the food space?
Well, very glad to give you a bit of an introduction and a background as to what we are doing. Basically, the motivation that really got us going in creating this company that is the engine, NameZ as you call it, that is the engine behind What If Food, was or is that very, very paradoxical situation in which we're living in right now. You know, we have a world built after the Second World War that is highly efficient in the way we produce agricultural commodities. But unfortunately, driven by economies of scale predominantly and other factors, of course, we have streamlined out many, many crops and plants from our diet. So only like a dozen of crops and a handful of livestock actually make 75% to 80% of all food that is consumed on a day-to-day basis. Now, that brings with it a lot of health complications to us as consumers, as well as the planetary health is at stake because of an insane consolidation of that industry. And that paradoxical situation is really the motivation in which we basically said there must be a much better way of doing things. And what we have done is for about 5 years, we have investigated quite a number of different topics, right, starting from sustainability into efficiencies, into technology, how we make food. And that got us ultimately to create What If Foods.
So, you know, when we look at the status of food around the world, of course, now people are becoming much more conscious of especially industrial farming and the impact that's had on the environment, the impact of drugs and steroids on cattle and poultry and things like that that we are then eating ourselves. Plant-based food is huge and becoming even bigger and more popular with people. When you think of NameZ and What If Foods, where are you on that side of the discussion?
Well, we know that we have a food security or a nutrition security challenge in front of us. You know, by 2050, we have to feed about 10 billion people. And that is literally a huge challenge with the current system. So we know that reducing our intake on meat is going to help us drastically. Another topic that is hotly discussed out there is the reduction of waste, food waste and other issues. However, I think what is a little bit underestimated is that we are losing a lot of arable land as we are speaking. So 23 soccer fields every minute of arable land gets actually lost in the process. Wow. And in order to feed the current system, in order to make new land available for the existing system, we deforest 30 soccer fields worth of primary forests and natural habitats at the same minute. Now, that is insane. Therefore, we need to also not only look at how we reduce waste and how we pivot towards a more plant-based diet in order to reduce the meat consumption, but also make sure that we grow crops on this degraded arable land in order for us to produce enough for the future, for one. For two, degradation of soil is bad news, because once the arable land is not productive anymore, we are not only losing that land and its production capacity, but also microbiomes, topsoils, and so on and so forth. Lastly, if we lose that land, what are these farmers going to do? Where is their income going to come from? And where are they going to go if there is no income anymore from that parcel of land that is not productive anymore? These are big, big challenges that we, with our approach to the creation of new foods, are happily taking on. And it's actually quite rewarding to do so on a day-to-day basis. It gives us fantastic pleasure, and we are humbled by the impact that we are achieving.
We're speaking with Chris Langwallner, the co-founder and CEO of What If Foods. And Chris, I've tasted some of your products, noodles and shakes, and they have a very clean taste. And I assume all of those are plant protein-based products. It is possible to create foods that are nutritious that also taste good. I mean, we've seen the Impossible Burgers make huge strides, and other companies, Quora and Corn, rather, and others. This is really a trend that I think that is emerging, that people are realizing, you know what, it's easy to buy plant-based food that actually tastes very good and is very good for you.
I guess you're right. I think what we and other companies are doing is that we are going out and exploring the ingredients world again. You know, going out and use a huge diversity of different ingredients and bring this biodiversity back into our diet, which is so beneficial for our health, you know, our bodily well-being as well as our mental well-being ultimately. Mm. Now, what we're trying to do with What If Foods is to basically say, can we actually blend these ingredients together? Can we take the pain of bringing the supply chains together to create food that actually tastes because of the ingredients that we use rather than the chemicals that we throw into it?
Right.
So therefore, clean eating is something that probably we have done 150 years ago by default, but we pivoted away from it because of, I would say, predominantly driven by greed, economies of scale, and probably the wrong KPIs. You know, go on for forever on that topic, but essentially what it really runs down to is we need to bring back these ingredients in order for people to explore these different flavors and textures again, so that we actually can make an impact. And I think it is, you're right, I think by the right combination and playing around with wonderful spices and other ingredients, you can actually drive taste in the direction that people just love.
What are some of the actual tastes, flavors, foods that you're trying to bring back at What If Foods, ones that you believe have been lost over generations?
So what we have done early on in our journey to build a portfolio of products that could potentially impact people while they're consuming it was basically we looked at, you know, what are occasions on a day-to-day basis, like breakfast, morning snacks, lunch, afternoon snack, evening dinner, and so on and so forth? And what sort of offering can we bring in with foods that basically can be blended in once in a while, and so on and so forth? Now, how we have done that is to basically say, okay, in the morning, a good shake for with fruits and vegetables that you can actually go and start a day with is something that we have done. We have done soups. Probably I take it late night because it's filling you up quite well. It's a warm dinner, and it keeps you going. And then we have, of course, our noodles that are just wonderful in between and wonderful things together with fruits and vegetables, or vegetables per se. So how we actually enable the nutrient density in these products is by looking at what we call future fit crops. Now, I think this goes back to the question that you have asked me, is what sort of ingredients do we actually use in order to bring these foods alive? Mm. And we actually have focused on a couple of those, like the Bambara groundnut would be one. We have focused also on Moringa, and we are on the way to bring back and bring in more of these wonderful crops. Why we actually focus on these is because, number one, our filter that we actually use in order to select for them includes the selection for a healthy, nutrient-dense offering for consumers, but also then the ability to grow these future fit crops, as we call them, on degraded arable land, so that we are bringing back meaningful incomes to farming communities in this part of the world, but also in West Africa and in other parts as we grow. So all in all, this is very, very, very rewarding. Yeah. Because we see that not a one-dimensional thinking process, but a circular thinking process impacts so many throughout the entire value chain in the process.
Chris, this nutritional paradox that you talk about, which is, you know, we're producing enough calories for 10 billion people every year, yet we've got, you know, so many people dying of starvation. We're building on our arable land. We're polluting our soil. You know, what is the way forward? I mean, you know, you and others have been talking about this and trying to do something about it for years. And everybody realizes it's a problem. And yet it seems like the interests of big business or whomever are so strong, so powerful that, you know, they are really driving that agenda. What is the way forward in actually, you know, making the very things you're talking about and this food paradox go away?
So first of all, I don't believe, unfortunately, that there's going to be a silver bullet, neither is there going to be a golden bullet to resolve it. Yeah. There will be many, 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 probably thousands of different attempts being needed in order to resolve such a very, very complex situation in which we have maneuvered ourselves into. However, we have a good go about it. And what we do, Nutritional Paradox, is essentially an initiative that we created about 18 months, 2 years ago, bringing this together from a viewpoint that is unbiased as much as we possibly could, bringing basically together to say, you know, what's the outcome of the system that we currently have? I was just having recently a conversation with somebody who says, listen, Chris, actually the agri-food system is not broken. It just produces the wrong outcome. Mm. And actually I was thinking, hey, that's actually true, because it is so damn efficient that even if you wish to break a supply chain, you can't, because there are so many vested interests in it.
Right.
So what we are trying to do is we are trying to look at basically to say, as I said before, what are the challenges that we as people and consumers have? And that is, can we have tasty foods on our shelves? Can we access them at a decent or as an affordable price point very, very conveniently? And I have to say, unfortunately, if you walk through the aisles of supermarkets, you hardly find any. Yeah. So therefore, our goal is to bring in not only noodles, shakes, and soups, but actually widen the portfolio of offering so that we actually have many, many more offerings on the shelf. And then therefore, once we achieve the demand creation, the business per se is going to take care of growing then these future fit crops on degraded arable soil, rejuvenate that soil, make it productive again, and bring meaningful livelihoods back to the farming communities, which is important. Otherwise, we are going to add them into climate change refugees.
Yeah.
And OECD came out a few years ago basically warning us that if we don't take care of these vulnerable communities, then 100 over million people are going to be set in motion. And in today's day and age, we can't even deal with a few million people trying to find rescue elsewhere. How on earth are we going to deal with 100 over million people? So there is a call for the hour, and this is how we are going to take on the nutritional paradox, by basically thinking very, very circular. We call it 360 sustenance. Mm. We don't like the word sustainability because too much has been discussed of it. As you said before, 20 over years, I see the same slides with updated data, nothing is changing.
Yeah.
So basically we said, no, let's stop all of this. Let's redefine as to what is needed. Let's focus on degraded arable land. Let's focus on the resilience of farming communities, and let's focus on consumer health and actually drive that as an agenda forward. And that is what If Food is all about.
Chris, what can individuals do to try to start to play a positive role in positive change when it comes to this?
Well, unfortunately, people don't really think of them having a huge power. So therefore, let me just give you an example on myself as to what I have done a few years ago. Before I do that, let me just add to the conversation that I grew up north of Salzburg in Austria, mm-hmm. and I grew up in literally livestock, dairy, meat, butchering, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. That was my family business. So I grew up as a carnivore. I was basically having meat like 4 times or 5 times a day.
Wow.
So I loved it. But a few years ago, I basically said, hang on, I am not feeling well anymore. Actually, my blood results look terrible. I had a doctor warning me that if I want to see my kids growing up, I should change my life. So I pivoted away. I became a flexitarian, and I changed the way I've consumed foods. In the meantime, I'm a vegetarian, and I have basically started to eat clean and think about consciously as to what I consume. Now, what I have done as an average European is that I have reduced the carbon footprint equal to about 1,200, 1,500 liters of petrol every year.
Wow.
I am saving, by just that shift, I am saving about 500,000 to 1 million liter of water every year. That is good enough for an additional 3 or 4 people on a day-to-day basis being fed with their fruits and vegetables. Mm. Now, these are gigantic swings individuals can make if they just commit to say, I'm consciously consuming a healthier diet that is probably a little bit less of meat involved in it. Go and consume it consciously again, rather than just accepting it as a fact that is blended into as a cheap filler everywhere. And if we do that, we can drastically change the way agri-food is being driven, but it has to start with us as individuals. And therefore, I'm advocating basically to say, make a step forward and try to reduce and change your habits a little bit, it's amazing what can come out of it as a result of it.
Every little bit helps, doesn't it? And Chris, where can people find out more information about NAMES or What If Foods?
So What If Foods is an online brand as of now. We are basically, if you come to whatiffoods.com, you will find our web store there and you can actually engage with us directly on it. And as we are sitting here and as we are building our business, we are looking forward to actually develop new sales channels in Singapore. So November is going to be a very, very busy month for us. We are ramping up activities to basically be known in let me say, traditional brick and mortar sort of distribution channels as well.
Great.
I can't say more because there are negotiations and discussions going on, but we are extremely humbled by the way these businesses, these brick and mortar businesses, talk to us. They want to have us on their shelves. We want to be there. So there is a meeting of like-minded minds, which is just fantastic. So from that point of view, we're looking forward to the end of the year, bringing in more products as well as being online as well as offline as we go and grow.
Chris Langvallner, thank you so much for being with us, the CEO of What If Foods. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Thank you much for having me.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.